Hello, everyone. I'm Dia Sharma. Welcome to Yana LV, where we're on a mission to normalize mental health discussions and to foster a supportive community. Yana stands for You Are Not Alone. That's exactly what this show is all about. Here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond, we're breaking barriers and challenging the stigma surrounding mental health. Through candid conversations, expert insights, and personal stories, we're exploring the highs and lows of mental health and well-being all together. Today, we're thrilled to be joined by Lisa Lewis, the founder of Mind Mosaic Inclusive HR, who's a seasoned professional with over 12 years of extensive experience in human resources and management. Her proven track record includes resolving complex problems, implementing change management for HR initiatives, and contributing to organizational development. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well.
So what's Mind Mosaic's core mission?
The core mission is to support all the different neurotypes within organizations. I've worked as a HR manager and director of a number of different organizations that supported neurodivergent individuals. And it was kind of like a unicorn land where we had about 20 clinicians, many of who were neurodivergent, and we just kind of lived and breathed universal design and inclusive design, being able to support all the different ways people think and communicate within organizations. When I left that, my last organization a few years ago, and I went back to school for EDI, and I realized that there was a name for it. It was really nice to be able to have the theory before actually learning about it and seeing the difference. And then when I decided to start my own organization supporting neurodiversity, I was really surprised that everyone didn't live that way. A lot of people would say, you know, I'm surprised you're not, you don't have any shame about saying that you have ADHD, and I didn't know that I was supposed to. And so I just want to be able to share and support other organizations and other individuals so that they can work at their best and learn about team communication, and that it's not one-sided. It's not on the neurodivergent individual to change, but to learn about how everybody works best and open those lines.
Yeah. So how is your work different from typical HR firms?
I do a lot of training so that organizational teams can understand what neurodiversity is. It's not that you're broken, it's that everybody learns and processes and communicates in different ways so that they understand the why behind different behaviors and can implement different strategies or workplace processes to be able to have the team thrive and everyone be happy at work, because there's nothing more important about being at work. And then I do a lot of consulting, like workplace investigations, to be able to figure out where the problem is and help people, support people in changing the atmosphere. And yeah.
That's awesome. One thing that you said that I really liked was how you said that not everyone's broken, but everyone processes and understands things differently, which I think is very true.
Yes. I received my first diagnosis of ADHD and dyslexia at the age of 40. I just turned 50 last week, oh my word. And before that, I was trained in the medical model. I've been working within a number of different hospitals and autism programs. And I knew how I was taught and how I thought about different neurodivergent neurotypes. And after I got my first diagnosis, at first I was really surprised because I didn't see the traits in myself. And then there's a huge overwhelming sense of grief because I had always felt a little different, a little odd. And this was just this confirmation. And so I did what every self-respecting ADHDer does. I went down that rabbit hole and researched quite a bit, and that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years. And then I learned more about the psychosocial model and the strengths-based model, and that's when I really began to own who I was. I joined a number of different neurodivergent communities to be able to find my tribe and learn that I'm not the only one. And when I learned more about the strengths-based model, I really began to see the traits in myself and was able to view myself differently. All of my life, I had thought that I jumped around and didn't really stick to anything. And I grew up thinking that I wasn't very smart. And then when I was able to reflect back on my life, I realized that I was exactly where I was supposed to be. And when I see that I've been to 45 countries, I've worked all over the world, I've had so many different experiences, I've gone back to university, you know, a number of different times, I realized just because I didn't do things typically doesn't mean that it was the wrong way.
Yeah. What you said about finding a community and reaching out to other people, feeling like you are not alone, could you like elaborate more on that?
It's been great, this new focus on neurodiversity and learning more about it. In the past, it was people had fear around it or felt uncomfortable because they didn't really understand the different ways that different neurotypes act and thought. And so being able to connect on different social media platforms, there's so many coming out now, and to be able to rely on each other, have laughs with each other, figure out different strategies, and realize everyone, you know, as you grow up, you create your own kind of, you set up your own environment without even realizing that you're creating strategies half the time. And then once you learn more about the different strategies that other people use and the reason why you do the certain things that you do, like I believe when I received my diagnosis now, it was more like a gift of understanding. So when I tell a story that's a long story longer, I understand why I do that. Or how to create focus, how to be more productive. It's been super helpful. And the one community that I really appreciate that I'm part of, there's a psychologist in the States. Her name is Dr. Megan Ananuff, and her community is, she has a website called Neurodivergent Insights and a podcast called Neurodivergent Conversations with another psychologist, Patrick Castell. And finding that community was like my pivotal point. It was my aha moment when I really began to understand myself. So I have joined her community for the last few years, and there's been great support there and communication.
I think that finding a community that you really see yourself with, I think also really helps, because then you find individuals that you feel like supported by, you can talk to, you feel seen.
100%. And it's been so valuable to me with, you know, having my two teen daughters, that they are able to understand themselves now and have grace for themselves and not feel the way that I felt when I was in high school and growing up, and hopefully not have the same struggles.
So what kinds of companies do you usually work with?
It's been quite a variety. Currently, I'm working with an oil company. I've worked with the BC Nurses Union, UBC's medical faculty, different nonprofits, disability societies. And again, it's all different. Some of them just want to learn more and have training, and other people would like some support so that they can help support their teams. People seem to be very interested. At first, there was, when it was coming out, whether more training and information was coming out, it almost felt like it was like anti-neurotypical. And now it seems to be more like a collaboration that everybody really wants to learn about each other and support each other.
So how do neurodiversity and mental health connect at work?
It's like the chicken and the egg. If you are not supported at work, or you may not know that you're neurodivergent, work life can be very difficult, especially if people don't understand the reasons why you were doing certain things that you do, or trying to mask the entire day to be able to hold yourself to different standards. Before I was diagnosed, I was a regional manager for a organization. I used to take Ativan before I went into the office. I was constantly down on myself because I wasn't able to focus for long periods of time. It didn't seem like I could get things finished. And I was very self-aware all the time of how I was holding myself. After learning about, you know, who I am and why I think the way that I do, I was able to put in different strategies, connect with other people to figure things out. Like, for example, I used to be a competitive rower, And I didn't realize how important movement is. And I would have hyperfocus. I would get into the office, I would start working. And then it was almost like my brain shut down after a few hours. I would have brain fog and I couldn't sit and I couldn't concentrate. And it was awful. And then one day I went and spoke to one of our occupational therapists at work. And she's like, you know what? You need some heavy work. So this is probably not typical, but I have a rowing machine and erg under my desk. So once an hour, I just put on a timer and I just put on some loud music and I erg for a couple of songs. And by having that break and that heavy work, I'm able to focus the entire day. It just makes things so much easier when you can find out these little different strategies that really help you.
Yeah, like you said about strategies, I think it's so helpful, especially I feel like many people really enjoy movement as a strategy, like different kinds of movement. Like you said, like you like rowing, but some people go on runs, walks, dance, and also not only like physical activity, but also like mental stuff. Like for example, like many people journal, people bake, and I just think it's great like how everyone has their own like thing that works for them.
Yes, and like what I try to do with organizations is, explain how different neurotypes may think and work better, but then also explain how implementing these different strategies universally can help everyone. So yes, taking a break helps me because I have ADHD, but it's also super helpful for my brain fog because I'm in menopause. And then there's a number of research studies that show that if they gave a number of different individuals a problem to solve. And all the individuals who went for a walk while they were thinking and processing the problem came up with better, more well-rounded answers. So the benefits of just offering things across the board instead of singling individuals out to be able to have different accommodations. The other issue is that there was a study, and I can't remember where it's from, but they said that 70% of accommodations are requested by people who are neurotypical. And at first I was very surprised. And then when I was reading it, it was saying, like, mothers who ask for flexible work schedules to be able to pick up their kids after school or different accommodations like that. But then when I really thought about it, there was so much shame in not being able to do what I thought I was able to do. I would do everything possible before asking for help. And with the different barriers that people have access to assessments, not wanting to share their diagnosis because it's personal to them or because they don't want people to think of them in a different way. It's hard all the time to be able to prove that you need a different adjustment, get a medical note, and then let's say once you receive a different accommodation or adjustment, how you're viewed by everybody else. If you have a flexible schedule, and no one else does, there could be some animosity. And so, by being able to offer these different accommodations across the board, everybody can utilize the ones that they need without feeling the barriers or feeling disconnected from the rest of the team.
We're going to take a short break. We're talking with our guest, Lisa Lewis, about neurodivergency here on Yana LV. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Yana LV. We're here with Lisa Lewis. Now we'll continue our conversation about neurodivergency. So what's one common mistake people associate around neurodivergency?
Well, pack a lunch. It's so, I guess the biggest one that I can think of is that everybody who is autistic or is ADHD or dyslexic is exactly the same and they all have the exact same traits. There are a lot of commonalities, or there's a lot of splinter skills, and it's neurodiversity is on a spectrum. So someone who is ADHD, may have a really hard time with focus, and someone else may not have the same difficulties. The other thing that comes to mind is that So 80% of individuals who are autistic are also have ADHD and vice versa, or have some other co-occurring neurotype. And the opinion is that, you know, before it was like, oh, they're more broken, where it's not more broken. It's just very much, that's just the way how we're made, how our brains are wired. And it's just, there's a lot of overlapping traits. And it's more often that we have these overlapping conditions. So I'm just going to say this, I am a visual thinker. And it, you know, a few years ago, I found out about that not everybody thinks in pictures. And I was like, mind blown. And so when you're thinking in pictures, it's almost like you have to translate. And so visual thinkers think faster than they speak. And so a lot of times it's really hard to get the words out. And then sometimes it sounds almost jumbled, or that you're not as intelligent as you are, which is not what you want to be able to put across to somebody. But again, even something like that. So being able to explain that I'm a visual thinker, and sometimes it's easier if I write things down to get the thoughts out.
Yeah, so like you said about that, many people have this misconception that ADHD, like autism, they're all like the same thing, which I think, like you said, there's like overlapping, like kind of similarities, but at the same time, I feel like they're so different from one another. So,
oh yeah, they are. The different neurotypes are very different, but there is overlapping traits, and due to the way that our brains are wired, we often have co-occurring conditions. It's like, it's a struggle, but it's also a blessing. Like I wouldn't change it for the world. Well, except for the times when I'm having a really hard time focusing. But being able to see things in a different way, it drives my husband crazy, because I'm always moving everything around in the house. I'm always redesigning and redecorating the house, but I don't have to measure. I don't have to move things to be able to see. I can just close my eyes and I know exactly the size of everything, and I can just place it in my mind and then move it, and things just fit perfectly. Problem solving, I'm like a dog with a bone. I won't let it go. And you can kind of like zoom in and zoom out to be able to see the different aspects of the problem, to be able to see avenues that others may not be able to see. I love the fact that, well, I sometimes love the fact that my mind is always thinking, and that I can have so many different interests. There are very many times when I wish I could just like quiet my brain for a little bit so that I could have a little bit of a break. But the more I research, the more engaged and more fascinated I am, or the more I learn, I realize how little I know, and there's so much more to learn.
So how can companies make it safer for people to share their experiences?
The first thing is with management and upper management, you have to have their buy-in first, or nothing's going to happen. No one's going to feel the trust to be able to make any changes or to come forward and ask for help. If you are able to find a manager who is able to share their own weaknesses or challenges and work with the team in collaboration, you'll find there's a huge benefit to this. When I was managing my last team, we had about 100 staff, and I'd be running team meetings, and it would be hilarious because I would say, you know, I'd write all these different notes, and I couldn't remember why I wrote the notes. And I'd be like, okay, case notes. Does anyone remember why we were going to talk about case notes? And someone would help me out. Or I'd say, listen, I'm a mom. I have ADHD. If there's something that you want me to do when you ask me verbally, you're going to have to email me as well, because it's going to be gone. Everything is just, I have the memory of a fish. And because I was able to just be who I was and share that, you know, I had these different difficulties and ask for help, it almost became like an open door where people would come to me and let me know about their different challenges, and we'd share strategies, and it just became like a really cohesive team, and it was wonderful. And, you know, these different adjustments and changes don't have to be expensive. You know, most of them are free or under $500. And to be able to have that team collaboration, like turnover is high. It's really expensive to be able to be constantly hiring and retraining people. You're not getting people who are really having time to acquire their skills. So it really makes a huge difference to the organization to be able to keep, retain their staff, and that everyone's working together happily because they understand. Here's another example. So let's say you're talking to someone, and this is a really like silly kind of question. Let's say you ask someone and you said, hey, you know, I'm going out for lunch. Do you want me to grab you a sandwich? And you didn't know that he was an internal processor. And so while he's thinking about this, it takes him a minute to take it, and you're kind of feeling uncomfortable because he's taking so long. So what you do is you're like, you try to help him along. You're like, well, do you want like a turkey sandwich or a ham sandwich? Thinking that you're helping him out. But people who are internal processors sometimes can take up to 60 seconds to reply, which can feel like a really long time. But when you re-ask a question, you kind of reset the clock. So then, you know, you may go off to your friend and be like, it's really strange. You know, I was asking Joe, it just took him forever to answer this question. And it's just really odd. But if you knew he's an internal processor, you wouldn't ask the second question. That space, that empty space, which a lot of people are very uncomfortable with, wouldn't feel uncomfortable because that time now has value. It has purpose. Like, you understand why he's taking so long to respond. Yeah, it's just really helpful when you learn more about your team. I've been creating a work style profile. And so there's a few out there. I think there's one that's called Manual of Me or Read Me. I know a number of different tech agencies use that. And it just delineates how each individual on the team, whatever they want to share, how they best work, learn, and communicate. You know, I prefer email over text. You know, my best focus times, when the best times for meetings, how I like to be thanked. And if you share this with the team, everybody has a little bit of a sense of you. The UK and Australia seem to be far ahead of us in these different adjustments. And the organizations that I've spoken to over there, it's just commonplace. Like, when someone new is coming in, they'll say, hey, you know, can you update your profile so that this person knows exactly when to contact you or how you work, so that it reduces those miscommunications. I was presenting, I think, till there was like 600 people, and I presented this profile, and I said, how would you feel if your manager just put this, you know, on the table in front of you? And the majority of everybody said, I don't feel comfortable. Who's going to see this? Will this be used against me? And again, at first I was surprised, because I'm like, this is just how you work and learn. But we've always been taught to hide our weaknesses. You know, if you're at an interview and someone says, you know, what's your weakness? You're like, oh, I'm a perfectionist, or, you know, I work too many hours, and not being able to show your true self. So I've been creating a kind of like a neurodivergent or a neurodiversity guide of the different adjustments, the way people think, the benefits of the different adjustments for the neurodivergent individual, for other individuals, and the benefits to the company. So hopefully by organizations who are implementing this tool, having that guide and understanding the why behind behavior, not just I have ADHD, so I need a flexible schedule, or, you know, different adaptive software, they understand the why. So there's more connection to be able to implement and accept the different changes and see the benefits for everyone across the board.
Like you said about understanding and just knowing why that person's, like, you know, like the example that you said about like the sandwich thing, and like giving them room to respond, like just understanding that they need some time, I think like creates a big difference.
It's huge. Like a lot of organizations, when they bring me in, it's an acute situation. You know, they have team meetings, and, you know, one individual is being very blunt, or being rude, or is getting upset with everybody else, and realizing once you come in and hear all the different stories, hear about all the different setting events, and being able to have everyone see each other's perspectives. You know, people are innately good. People are typically well-meaning. And once you break down the why behind the behavior, and then put in different supports to be able to support everybody's needs, it just feels better. You feel more heard. You don't have to mask. We're all human. It's just, you know, be really nice just to be happy when you spend most of your life at work, right?
Yeah. So what's one change you'd love to see in how companies talk about these issues?
I think just taking the time to talk to your team and to learn about the different types of neurodiversity and the why. I think a lot of organizations, when they contact me, they typically have, a 45-minute learning session once a month, and they want me to come in and in 45 minutes explain all the different neurodivergent conditions and what they can do about it, and that's not going to create any behavior change. There's no benefit to them by having these little snippets of learning to be able to actually really take the time to learn about the different neurotypes, but really more about their people. There was one change that I made within my organization, which was kind of like a fluke. So we were supporting different neurodivergent kiddos and youth out in the community. So we had about 80 different staff, and we were having all these different issues. The clinicians were getting upset because they didn't have materials, or they weren't doing their jobs properly, and it almost felt like herding cats. And everybody was getting really reactive and upset. So I decided to start contacting each of the staff members. Just for like 15-minute check-ins, and I did, maybe 8 or 10 a week, and I just kind of did this on rotation. When I connected with, each staff member, my first thought was to be kind of like a triage. If they had like a clinical question, I knew where to send them. If they needed any materials, I could get that done. But at the same time, I really wanted to learn about my own systems and how things were working, and more about them. So I would say, what are your hopes and dreams after, outside of working for this organization? What things are really working, what things aren't? And I really got to know all of my different staff, and all these different fires I could catch before and typically didn't need to become fires. I was able to tweak all my systems, because who knows better than the people who are working frontline what's working and what's not. And because I was able to have that time with each individual, they became more connected in with me and felt that it was easier to come and ask me for different things or to share different things that they needed. It was like the number one change that I implemented that I would recommend to any organization.
So we're out of time for this episode. Thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us this evening. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You can find past episodes and other programs at WDIY.org, on the WDIY app, and on major podcast platforms. I'm Dia Sharma, and this is WDIY 88.1. We'll see you next time on Yana LV. Remember, you are not alone.